And with the familiar tones of AC/DC playing, we begin another episode of Wrestling Observer Live, the daily institution. That's right. My name is Josh Nason. It is Sunday, January 26th, and I'm coming to you coast to coast, from the North Pole to the South Pole, from the beaches of California to the beaches of Maine. Hey, why not? Every single day on WrestlingObserver.com. Of course, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, over-the-air affiliates, iHeartRadio, apps, everywhere else you get a signal in this fine world of ours. Special shout out to those listening on the American Forces Network. We thank you for your service every single day. And thinking of you and your families, of course, hoping you're getting home safe wherever you live in this world. And yeah, we're going to talk about pro wrestling over the next hour. Big surprise, right? Biggest news of the pro wrestling weekend was most of it, I say pretty much all of it, coming out of Saturday, because we went head to head with WWE and AEW once again. The second installment of Saturday night's main event in the new NBC era happened last night. Not a ton of news coming out of the show. A little disappointing in that regard, but lots to talk about still. Of course, AEW Collision gave us a few things to talk about as well, including the return of a character that a lot of people are excited to see back. Me, we'll talk about that on this very show. A new contender for Mercedes Moné. Some matches set up for this week and I guess far in the future as well, based on how things went last night. So a lot to talk about from AEW Collision, of course. And JBL, we'll chat about him. What is he doing? We'll answer that question and also why I asked it. Royal Rumble coming up a week from today. We'll chat about that. Collision is going to go head-to-head to the Royal Rumble. Why? More on that. Of course, the mystery of Grand Slam Australia. TNA. Yes, we'll talk about TNA on this very show. All kinds of other stuff as well. So come on right back after the break. Wrestling Observer Live with Josh Nason, back after this. All right, back on Wrestling Observer Live. My name is Josh Nason. I'm a contributing editor to WrestlingObserver.com, filling in for Andrew Zarian once again this week. Kind of a last-second thing, but happy to do it. And he will be back next week. So not a back-to-back week thing like happened during the holidays, but happy to help out Andrew and looking forward to hearing his dulcet tones, so to speak, coming back in less than a week's time. Of course, you can hear him plenty of places between now and then. Guys all over the place. We're live, pal, on WrestlingObserver.com. He also does some work for some other websites, too. So, yeah, no shortage of Andrew Zarian's voice out there. And look forward to hearing him back on Wrestling Observer Live in a week's time for Royal Rumble. Yeah, we'll talk more about Rumble in a bit. Let's chat about AEW Collision from last night. And the big topic, of course, Toni Storm making her return to the company. I should say timeless Toni Storm's return to the company, because, of course, let's kind of unpack this whole thing. That's right. Last night, the character of timeless Toni Storm made her return for the first time since last August. Of course, you know the timeline by now. If you don't, I'll go over it with you real quickly. So Toni Storm lost the AEW Women's World title to Mariah May last August at All In. And her timeless character, which is a throwback to Hollywood Golden Age character, Golden Age, rather. So, you know, the whole black and white thing, just, you know, very dramatic and so on, playing a starlet from that era from long ago. And due to the loss, it threw her into a mental schism. You know, she went off the rail. She essentially left the company. She was disappeared, not really, but she was gone and took some time off. She competed in Stardom in Japan. She competed in Mexico for CMLL, did not pick up wins, just adding to her woes. And then she returned at December's Winter is Coming as a brand new character, so to speak. A throwback to her original Toni Storm character and acting like nothing was wrong. And she, it came out after Mariah May win and just kind of, you know, acknowledged the crowd and so on. And from there on, it kind of got a little bit more confusing because she essentially had amnesia and was acting like she was a rookie. It's her first time at AEW and she was just happy to be there and so on. And that was that. And people were like, well, and people around like, well, you've seen these people before, you know these people. And she was pretending like she didn't. We didn't know that till last night when Mariah May and Toni Storm got in a confrontation. Head of their world title match coming up at next month's Grand Slam Australia, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. So these two get in a conversation and gets physical, and Mariah May beats Toni Storm up, hits her with a belt, slaps her, all that stuff, leaves her for dead. And Tony Storm takes the microphone and says something to the effect of, you know, did you think our dance was done? And then the crowd starts going, oh, like something's happening. And the character of Timeless Tony Storm returned. She was apparently acting this whole time. I assume we'll get more details on this this week coming up. I assume on Dynamite or Collision. And she essentially is back for blood, and she wants revenge after this run of acting like she didn't know anyone and so on. So it adds, you know, adds a little bit more intrigue going into their women's title match. The question I saw posed, and this I think was a little bit of pearl clutching, as does happen on social media, was why this happened on Collision, which is seen by less people than Dynamite. And I've seen the point made pretty well by Fightful Sean Ross Sapp, especially where when WBD did this renewal, they weren't saying you're going to get paid more for Dynamite than you are Collision. They're getting paid essentially an equal amount to do both shows. So Collision is an important part to AEW, and it's on Saturday nights, and they need things to happen on that show, or else it's going to turn into Rampage. So I just saw this notion of, oh, you know, it should have been, why are they doing this? And look, like, I think there's a lot of things to complain about with AEW. I don't think that is one of them by any means. And you have to have people value the time that they're spending with your product, no matter what night it's on. And if they're watching something like, oh, things happen on the show, that means more people should tune in. If they're annoyed it's on Saturdays, I don't know what to tell you, because that's just kind of how it is. But it's, you know, as far as the character itself, it's never really been for me. I think it was they overdid it a little bit with the appearances early on, and it kind of went from a novelty to an every single week thing. And I don't know. I think wrestling is fun because it's over the top. That's why we get into it. I mean, we're watching people compete in colorful spandex and doing crazy things. Like, over the top is that's on the marquee. But I think there are some things where it's so far over the top, and especially if you kind of see it so often, you know, whatever. But not everything is for everyone. And look, people seem to be excited about it. It seemed to get a lot of chatter online. So good for them. So we'll see if this does anything. Their match coming up in a couple weeks, of course, on Grand Slam Australia, a show that I don't understand why we still don't know where this is going to air. And I'm trying to avoid the, well, it's just, this is what AEW does type of thing, or what have you, or make this a proclamation of any bigger problems and so on and so forth. But to me, if you have a schedule, you should know where your stuff is going to air, and the fan should know where it's going to air so they can plan ahead. So if for some reason you're listening to this, you have no idea what I'm talking about. Maybe you're driving around a car somewhere, or you're overseas, or you have no idea what I'm talking about, I'm going to tell you. So they have this show coming up. Originally, it sounded like it was going to be a pay-per-view level show for the company's debut in Brisbane, Australia, coming up on Saturday, February 15th. Originally, it was going to be in a outdoor stadium. However, they realized the ticket sales were not what they like, so they moved to an indoor stadium. I still don't think the ticket sales are probably ideal, because it's not sold out yet. I was looking this morning. Plenty of seats left. So there are sections you can't buy seats. I don't know if they're because they're sold out, or I don't know if it's because they are blocked off. I think it's because they're blocked off, but we'll see on that night. I think the assumption is they're getting money from the local government or a promotion company to bring them in. Again, they were supposed to run a stadium, and this is supposed to be a really big thing. And it's turned out this whole situation is, and again, I try not to be too hyperbolic, this feels like a kind of like a disaster for them in a lot of ways. Not what they expected. There's only two matches announced. And originally, we thought that it was going, we know it's going to air on TV and on Max somehow. And the graphic they shared 2 weeks ago said 8 p.m. Eastern. So at least we knew, okay, it's going to be a tape delay. It would say 8 p.m. Eastern. However, the issue was, of course, I'm forgetting, NBA All-Star Weekend, which is on TNT. So how are two shows going to happen at once? That was a mistake. How that gets to air, I don't understand. But still, we don't know, is it going to air as a tape delay after the NBA All-Star Weekend festivities? Is it going to air live on Max at 8 p.m. Eastern? Is it going to air live as it emanates from Australia and then people can just watch it anytime? What is the deal with this? And again, we're 3 weeks, just basically 3 weeks out. I can't think of other properties where you don't know where something is going to air because you have to have your plan, right? And you get like TNT and TBS schedule. You look at any cable network schedules; they're listed weeks in advance, and there's still nothing listed yet for Grand Slam Australia. To me, as a fan, I would think run it live in Max where it airs, assuming the cost is the same, and you're just putting up on the bird, so to speak, on a satellite. Run it live on Max in Australia, has it a value add, and then have it just put it up on Max or wherever they want to watch, and then run it tape delay at what's probably going to be like midnight or 1 a.m. or something like that, East Coast time, on TNT. But at that point, people have already been able to watch it. So I'm not really sure what the consternation is, what the delay is, and who is holding this up. Is it AEW or is it WBD? I can't imagine it would be AEW, but it's possible. So we'll talk more about the other happenings from Collision last night, some returns we had, kind of a confusing pick for Mercedes Moné's next challenger coming up in a few days at Wednesday Dynamite, which only has a couple matches announced. Of course, we'll talk about Saturday night's main event, JBL, and maybe if we have time, I'll get in something that Dave Meltzer said that made me sad over the weekend. No one likes to be sad, especially after something that Uncle Dave wrote on social media. We'll talk more about that and all types of other stuff after the break. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Wrestling Observer Live. Back with you on Wrestling Observer Live for a Sunday, January 26th. My name is Josh Nason. Big day for the NFL. I don't know who I want to move on to this. I'm so conflicted. I am a long-suffering New England Patriots fan. I know you're laughing at that if you know who the Patriots are. But yeah, it's conflicted because you have on the NFC side, you have the Philadelphia Eagles and Washington Commanders. I like Washington just because, you know, Philly has beat the Patriots before and kind of over that whole Philly thing, you know? I mean, just get over it. So we'll go with Washington, I hope, for the NFC. The AFC, boy, it is tough. Because you have the Kansas City Chiefs, who have turned into the new wave Patriots and that no one wants to see them win, other than Kansas City fans, of course, and bandwagon fans around the country. They get all the calls, you know, quarterback gets all the phantom calls, all these type of things. We're just kind of tired of seeing the Chiefs win, right? And of course, every Super Bowl they win and all the good stats and so on from Patrick Mahomes, you know, keeps him in that Tom Brady kind of conversation for best of all time. You know, Tom Brady is the best football player of all times, no doubt about that. But, you know, Patrick Mahomes inches closer, but you have the Bills playing the Patriots division. Also, you know, the Bills didn't do the Patriots any favor, help him get that first pick of the draft in the final game of the season. So I'm conflicted on the AFC side, but I'm not conflicted about AEW. Well, actually, I am in a lot of ways. But let's go to some of the other AEW news from last night. Of course, a few things. We had some returns, in-ring returns, after some long absences, one of which I thought was quite something. So, of course, we had Samoa Joe opening the show with a win over Nick Wayne. Of course, this was Samoa Joe's first match since being taken out by Chris Jericho in a street fight last July. I believe that was in Calgary, Calgary Stampede street fight, I believe it was. Remember, he was taken out like a forklift in the back. And for some reason, he finally came back. Of course, he was off. The reason he was off was he was filming the second season of Twisted Metal. So he's gone for essentially like half a year. And he's finally back and made a surprise appearance last Saturday, made his in-ring return tonight, which I thought was, I thought it was good. Look, the fans love him. I love him. It's hard not to. But, you know, I hope that they are going to get the most out of him for as long as they have him. I don't know how long that is, but, someone had pointed out on social media that we need a Samoa Joe Kenny Omega match at some point, you know? And there's so many of these guys that you want to make sure you get all the fun matches you never thought you'd get. And that would be one, I don't know how they build to it, but that's one we need to see. Perhaps there's a tournament down the road. I don't know. But before the end of 2025, we need to see Samoa Joe versus Kenny Omega for like 22 minutes or something like that. Let's give a sec, Tony Khan, can you? So he made his return. So he's back, a nice major player in the mix there. Why he didn't, again, not go after Jericho after coming back, since he's the guy who took him back and decided to focus on, you know, Christian Cage and this group. I know there's conflicts with Hook and Taz, and it's just, you know, it's one thing that has never made sense to me with, you know, some of the AEW stuff where, and this happened with, I think, Jamie Hayter as well. When she came back, she didn't go right after the woman's title that she lost when she left, instead went after some Saraya, who didn't have anything to do with that. To me, when you leave, you should pick up, for the most part, right back where you left off. The exception, of course, being the MJF Adam Cole debacle, which we've talked about ad nauseum, and other people have as well. Also making his return last night, not as much a major player, but Angelo Parker, a.k.a. Cool Hand Ange, getting pinned in a trios match that included himself, Danny Garcia, and Matt Menard against Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, and Kyle O'Reilly. It was Parker's first AEW match since last April. Yeah, last April. He did wrestle three times this summer, past summer rather, for Ring of Honor, but he had not been in the ring since August due to him and Ruby Soho getting married. They celebrate the birth of their first child in October. I don't know if he had planned to take that much time off, or it was a case that didn't have any creative plans for him. I'm not really sure, but he is back again. Not a major player, but we'll see if Parker and Menard become more of an active duo. Menard doesn't really wrestle as much lately. He's more commentary and so on. So I'm interested to see what's going on with those two guys, and if the plans for him to have work more. And then Yuka Sakazaki, who made her return to AEW for the first time since last September. So not a big player in AEW, and they brought her back in an impactful way. She earned a TBS title shot coming up this Wednesday against Mercedes Moné. And this is a match that included a few other people that you would think would have got the shot first, which was Deonna Purrazzo. You had Queen Aminata, and you also had Serena Deeb. So you had three that have been around, essentially, in a sense. You know, Serena Deeb doesn't really wrestle a lot anymore, which has been commented on to death for, you know, a lot during this whole Britt Baker thing this past week. Serena Deeb has really not been action. Queen Aminata, this is someone that they signed and have some belief in, and you think maybe she might be a good chance. And also Deonna Purrazzo, who got signed, I believe, just over a year ago, and finally getting her a real big opportunity. She was in TNA forever, but getting her opportunity in AEW, and really has not gone, I think, as she planned, and has not been used a lot. And it's kind of like, well, I don't know if there's frustration on her part. I wouldn't blame her if there was, in terms of how she's being used. But she was the one that actually got pinned last night by Sakazaki, who, again, had not been on TV or not been in the company since last September. But I don't know if Mercedes Moné wanted to work with her. I don't know if it was just kind of an odd pick, but those things happen in AEW. So that's happening coming up this Wednesday. Other news and notes last night, we got a couple challenges, but we don't know when these matches are going to happen. I assume they're going to be the collision taping, which is coming up this Wednesday, which are Continental Champion Kazuchika Okada, rather, defending against Buddy Matthews. That sounds like a hell of a match to me. Penelope Ford taking on Thunder Rosa. And then we also had Darius Martin calling out Leo Rush. And again, why they didn't announce the matches already for this week, I'm not sure. But I think we're going to get all three of those probably on Collision this Saturday. However, that's going to be taped this Wednesday due to the Royal Rumble. Max Caster doing an open challenge series. The Don Callis family may be expanding, or perhaps already has expanded, because last night, this is something that kind of flew under the radar a little bit. When Don Callis noted to his family in a pre-taped vignette, someone mentioned the five of them, and he's saying, and who said there's only five of us? And they made that a big point on social media after. So yeah, it appears that another member, perhaps multiple members of the Don Callis family may be coming. So we'll see how that plays out in the weeks and months to come. I'm going to guess more weeks than eight. But yeah, overall, you know, I'd say pretty solid, easy to watch Collision. And again, way more newsworthy than Saturday night's main event on the WWE side of things. And not a lot happening here when it comes to news. And believe me, we do love news at WrestlingObserver.com. We adore news and so on, of course. Any website would. But really, you know, there was no title changes, rather. There was three title changes. Or it's got three title matches, rather. Sorry. The big thing, it seems to be coming out, is everyone now is convinced Jacob Fatu is the main eventer based on his presence and annihilation of Braun Strowman. Not enough to be able to beat Braun Strowman. There was apparently a DQ win for Braun Strowman. Why in the year of our Lord 2025 you cannot have your one of your next big stars have a clean win over Braun Strowman, I'm not sure. There's no reason to protect him. There's no what you have is what you get, and that is it. This is he's reached the apex. Fatu is not. So why can't you just have him beat him clean on national TV? I don't understand. And I don't mean to be, I'm being a little bit facetious when I say people got to figure out Jacob Fatu is a main eventer. No kidding. I don't know why everyone all of a sudden is like, last night was a star making performance. I think people sometimes they feel like they have to do something, you know, you run websites and got to do columns or do whatever. And you have to figure out something to say about Saturday night's main event. And like Jacob Fatu is going to be a star. Everyone knew that beforehand. Everyone knew. Because he is one. He's going to be a bigger one. They position him as such, and he's going to have a huge 2025, a great signing by WWE. Did AEW ever make an offer on him? I'm wondering if they ever did when he was done with MLW. Was there ever a chance? Because he is he's box office bona fide, and he fits perfectly into the storyline. But I didn't need last night to tell me he's going to be a main eventer, because you can just tell. And he's going to be a champion one day. Could be by the end of the year. Who knows? They like to have longer title runs now, but he is destined for big things. And I'm certainly not the first person to say that, and I certainly won't be the last. There were some audio issues. If you watch the NBC broadcast like I did, it was two people talking over another. And I'm like, oh, this sounds like there's two people talking over each other. That's because there was. One was speaking in Spanish and one was speaking in English. And this lasted for quite some time, surprisingly. Apparently, this did not happen on the Peacock feed, but they had audio issues where it just got picked up by like awful announcing. I don't know if anyone else picked it up, but essentially, they had the Joe Tessitore doing his open, and the translated version in Spanish, who I assume was the WB Spanish announce team, was doing this at the same time, and they were running concurrently, and this lasted forever. It kept going on and on and on and on. And I'm confused why they weren't able to correct it. Very strange. They had this contract sign between Kevin Owens and Cody Rhodes for the Royal Rumble, which is coming up this Sunday. And HBK, Shawn Michaels, the Heartbreak Kid, delivering a super kick to Kevin Owens. Owens got physical with him as well. Owens is just like a comfortable pair of shoes. He just fits in this role so well. Even little things like, you know, walking out to the ring and taunting kids, or walking backstage and playing to the camera a little bit, but doing it such a natural way, is like one of the best parts of this post Vince era in so many ways, is that guys are just acting like themselves, and they seem calm and they seem confident, and they seem like, this isn't a character. This is just me. He wore a Cody Sucks Egg shirt, a tribute to Terry Funk, the Dusty Sucks Egg shirt, the red one we've seen so many pictures and so on and so forth. So Kevin Owens just perfect. Other legends appear on the show. You know, Ted DiBiase, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Tully Blanchard, Art Anderson, a couple others, Medusa, etc. So, but other than that, not really a big news night. And why was that? We'll talk more about that after the break. Wrestling Observer Live. Come on back. Back on Wrestling Observer Live for a Sunday afternoon, January 26th. My name is Josh Nason, filling in for Andrew Zarian. I want to wrap up with Saturday night's main event by saying this. Last night's show felt inconsequential, and I'm not the only person to say that. And there's few things I dislike more than inconsequential TV shows. You know, I just don't like them. And this happens in every promotion these days. AEW, God knows, they had Battle of the Belts, the most inconsequential shows I could imagine sometime, because no titles ever changed hands except for like the first couple. That was it. And it just seemed to be in there. And Saturday night's main event, I'm surprised at how lackluster last night felt. Obviously, packed house. I think it was 15,000 plus in San Antonio. You know, they had some fun moments, the Shawn Michaels super kick and so on and what have you, the title matches. And, you know, they put on a show. But it just didn't have, again, for a news value, it existed. And reason for that, of course, is we're in this content era where more and more and more matters. And the conflict, though, we're having is they have the Royal Rumble coming up a week from today. So they can't burn all the good stuff on Saturday. They still have to have people have a reason to tune in on Monday for Raw on Netflix. They still have to have a reason for people to tune in Friday on SmackDown. And then they sure want people to tune in on Sunday for the Royal Rumble. Or is it Saturday? I think it's Saturday for the Royal Rumble. I'm sorry, I keep saying Sunday. I mean, look, I'm 47. WWE pay-per-views were always on Sundays. Now they're PLEs and they're on Saturdays. It's going to take me a while to fully come around to that. But one of the things that I think all these AEWs and WWEs and so on is, especially like, you know, a WWE, when you have pay-per-views coming up, PLEs, whatever, is that you have to fill all this stuff with meaningful content, or else people aren't going to watch over time. They're going to realize, like AEW fans did with Rampage, that you don't need to watch it. And I don't know if that's a place that they want to be with Saturday Night's Main Event. I don't know where this kind of fits in their hierarchy of importance. Obviously, the NBC Universal relationship is an important one. The Peacock negotiations are going to come up for next year. In terms of where the PLEs are going to go and so forth. And SmackDown, obviously, on a five-year deal. There's history there. So you want to put on a good show, especially on NBC broadcast TV, for the extent that matters. It still does. And they're on this, and they had a good showing last time. You know, the viewership people didn't seem to be, think it was really that great. But I'm interested to see what the one for this one is. And then the one for the next one is really important, which I think is in May, if I have that right. So I, you know, this is the price to pay when, and it wasn't just anti-WWE people saying this. I saw some pro-WWE people saying this as well online, where there's like, this just showed it just didn't mean anything. And that you can't have all these shows without some consequences. And that's one of the consequences. People are like, yeah, it's fine. You know, it's fine. I'm sure there's some that loved it. But again, there is a such thing as too much anything. WWE, AEW, what have you. And this was part of it. What else from over the weekend? What is JBL doing? JBL appearing at another indie show last night, I believe, for AML in North Carolina, and did the same shtick that he's done in TNA. He's doing other promotions. MLW, I believe, other indies where he shows up, he stares at someone, he gives a clothesline from hell, and then he leaves. And he's been doing this for months and months and months and months and months. He appeared on WWE recently. He did not seem to do that there, I don't believe. But I don't know what the, if is there a second level to this, or is this kind of just it? Is he going to do a thing where he appears and explains all this, or is it just, this is his gimmick? Like, he can show up on any show anywhere in the world with his duster and his cowboy hat, clothesline someone, and then take off. I don't know. It's strange. It's interesting, but it gets to the point where its intrigue goes to what's the point? And I'm kind of closing in on that with JBL. So that was kind of a note. Other notes as well. I looked in the TNT schedule last night, and because we're talking in our Slack chat, as many people do on Saturday nights. And they were talking about, you know, trying to figure out coverage for next Saturday. And we're talking about AEW Collision. Like, oh, I assume it's going to air early so it doesn't go head-to-head with the Royal Rumble. Nope. No, that's not going to happen. It's Royal Rumble is starting at 6 p.m. Eastern, I believe. Collision is going to go live, or their tape show, rather, is going to go live at 8 p.m. in their normal time slot. So they're just going to take it on the chin, going head-to-head with the Royal Rumble. So good luck with that. We'll see what the lineup is for this show. It's going to be taped on Wednesday after Dynamite in Huntsville, Alabama. And there's not a lot on the docket for Huntsville as of right now. Even Dynamite, Mercedes Monet against Sakazaki, Jeff Jarrett taking on Claudio Castagnoli if Jarrett wins here in the AEW World Title Shot. And then Will Ospreay versus Brian Cage. And possibly some of the other matches I was telling you about that were teased, but yeah, I think Saturday is going to be a layup for them. They know it. And because WWE is running early, they don't want to run early. I guess you could run at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but the schedule says 8 p.m. Eastern. So it's going to run at 8 p.m. Eastern. Boy, that's going to take a hit for them coming up next Saturday. And of course, we'll talk more about the weekend in a minute. I got to get in this tweet that made me sad. And look, social media is really the dumbest thing. It really is in so many ways. You don't want to ever have tweets make you sad. And Uncle Dave Meltzer, someone I have known for well over a decade, this very website, met the man, talked to the man, texted with the man, made me sad. So he was replying back to somebody on X, as he tends to do, something where, you know, he does quite a bit. He likes to have people learn and study and all this stuff. And a lot of it, I think, is just reactive to the amount of grief he gets online. A lot of it brought on himself and so on and so forth. You know, everyone is talking about some of his tweeting regimen and how it's not the best, but I'll say that for another day. He talked about NXT ratings, and a guy named Craig replied to him and said, "Can we all just enjoy wrestling and care less about ratings? Care less about ratings, but care less about ratings." And Dave said, "You can all you want. If you want to actually understand business and decision-making, no. Without understanding the key business revenue metric, you actually can't." And I read this, and I get it. I fundamentally get it. I worked for this website institution, WrestlingObserver.com, for 13 years. I talk a lot about AEW business. You know, we're all into ratings and metrics and all these things. But that just depressed me, and I thought about it for a long time. And the reason is, it comes down to this. When you first started watching something that you love, did you ever think, I want to watch this, or did you ever think about the business aspect first? If I was watching, again, the Patriots when I was a kid, the Red Sox, the Celtics, the Bruins, pro wrestling, when I started watching it, and like, I think I was 8 years old, watching on Superstars of Wrestling, I never thought, oh man, what they draw in this house? What do they do? What do they do at the? What's their per cap for merch? How they do in ratings? How many stations they have? I you know, when people get into things that they love, they don't initially get into it for the business aspect first. And some people, like our great subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com, many of them are interested in the business of it. I think part of that is because it's made it easier if you're talking with people about wrestling and they give you the look, and we've all got the look before, you start talking about the business stuff. It's like, oh, there's some interest there. It's almost like, oh, I don't just watch it for this. I'm interested in all this as well. I think that's part of it. I think that was part of it for me at one point in my life, trying to explain this. I'm like, oh, it's doing the big, blah, blah, blah. But people don't get into the things that they love in entertainment and art for the business and to talk about these things. And I think comments like that, it makes me sad, because we're moving so far away from what we love, and that's the in-ring and the characters. That is what matters at the end of the day. Everything, how it makes you feel. I love Marvel movies. I like comic book movies. I go to all of them that I can. Even the Sony extended Spider-Man extended universe ones, like Kraven the Hunter. I think I talked about in a previous show. And Madam Web, I saw that, and I knew they weren't performing well. It's hard to not see box office stuff online, whatever. I knew they weren't doing well, but I wanted to go see them anyway, because I wanted to have that feeling. And it was the feeling of just going in and experiencing it and not knowing how you're going to come out of it. Now, if I looked at box office, or if I really wanted to say, oh, nobody's going to this, so I'm not going to go to this, I can't be seen going to this movie, or actually probably in that case, not seen. Right. I don't let those things affect whether or not I'm going to go see something, and yet neither should you. It should be of how does it make you feel? Now, there are certain parallels that maybe, you know, generally curious people are interested in, like, wow, there's not a lot of people here at this show. Why is that? And then you may start getting some curiosity scratch, and that's when you may be like, I want to learn more about the business. But no one ever goes into it thinking, I want to study the business first and then the entertainment second. At least I don't think so. And it makes me sad, because there's so many online has turned into this thing where people weaponize key demo numbers and viewership and so on against another side. And they're missing all this good stuff they're seeing in the ring. So many great characters, people literally putting their bodies and their livelihoods on the line for our entertainment. And it's reduced to numbers on a spreadsheet. And that's such a depressing thing. Now, I realize not all fans feel like that, but I see those things, and it's a sobering thought that that's where a lot of fandom is at. And it sucks. It really does. And I have to remind myself that not everyone thinks that way. There's indies, right? I go to my local indie. I've talked about my show, Limitless Wrestling. I do the podcast with them, and I mean, I'm friends with the owner. I do the show. I'm involved to an extent. I never ask about, well, what'd you draw for a house, right? I can see it. Like, is it sold out or not? Cool. Awesome. Great. But I don't, you know, I don't ever think about those things. It's a lesser extent, but I just hope that people are still enjoying wrestling and not just enjoying talking about the numbers as a combative thing, which I think there's a good segment of fandom that does. There is great stuff. And unfortunately, this conflict, this stupid conflict online with people saying that WWE is awful and AEW is awful and this is awful, they're missing so many good things. There's so much good stuff in every promotion. And granted, I get it. There's some stuff in WWE, it just doesn't work for me. It used to, it doesn't. There's some stuff in AEW that just doesn't work for other people. But that's based on how it makes you feel. And not on a business metric and not on all this. Curious people, great. But again, if somebody says you have to, if you want to actually understand business decision making without understanding the key business revenue metric, no, there's a lot of people that don't. They just want to go watch a freaking show. You know, when I was in love with Breaking Bad and all these Sopranos, The Shield, Lost. It was cool that when you saw things like, oh, all these other people watching it, because you feel like you're part of something. But what doesn't feel good is how's Lost doing in the key demos? You know, how's it performing here or so on? Is it going to affect storytelling down the road? I don't know. I've rambled on a little bit about this, but I just see these things. I just want you listening. Just remember, if you start getting dour about this stuff and you're like, I'm sick of all the arguing, think about why you first started liking wrestling to begin with. Go back to that and think that it doesn't, the numbers are fine and it, to an extent, but never forget why you first started watching to begin with. It'll help set you free. And it'll help make you and hopefully reinvigorate your fandom again. And that's what's the most important thing, your fandom. That's it. Back after this, Wrestling Observer Live. All right, final segment, Wrestling Observer Live. Sorry about that rant, everyone, but it just comes from the heart. And I hope you enjoyed it. Again, my name is Josh Nason, filling in one more week with Andrew Zarin, I guess being this week right now. He'll be back next week. And a lot to talk about here in the week ahead, including, of course, we have Raw coming up on Monday, SmackDown on Friday, the Royal Rumble. I love the Royal Rumble. WWE, as I mentioned, there's something that's just, they don't really work for me anymore, but I love the Royal Rumble. I love the surprises. I love the timed entrances, the buzz of who's going to come out next, and so on and so forth. Man, I can't get enough of it. And this year, I think, is going to be a lot of fun. There's a lot of intrigue. I like how the spider web has been woven by WB Creative in getting here. That there's a bunch of different possibilities. So I'm excited as I'm talking about this for the Saturday's Royal Rumble, and I hope you are as well. The Women's Royal Rumble should be interesting as well. But you know, again, I grew up on the Men's Royal Rumble first, so that's always my first love, and I'm looking forward to it. And the rest of the card seems to be coming together pretty well. But yeah, I'm interested again. We just had Saturday Night's main event. How is it going to make you feel coming out of Raw and SmackDown? And again, 6 hours to come, 6 hours on TV alone. And before we even get to the Royal Rumble. So buckle in for another big content week. Of course, we have Dynamite Collision. I mentioned those. Still not a lot on the docket there, and it's a long time before now and March's Revolution. So stay strapped in. We got a long bunch of storylines ahead. Of course, TNA. You know, TNA had a nice event with Genesis. They had a live show last Thursday. Very buzzworthy. A lot of news coming out of that. How do they follow up with that? Of course, it's a tape show, so we know a little bit how they're following up with it. But how do they build in their next dream event, kept the event and keep the momentum rolling? And how do we keep the momentum rolling here? Well, hopefully we'll be back again. Coming up on Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi tomorrow. All the great stuff on our website, WrestlingObserver.com, and of course right here in Sports Byline Network or wherever you're listening to audio. So once again, thank you for joining me. Thanks again for hosting me, and yeah, we'll call it good. My name is Josh Nason, and this has been another episode of Wrestling Observer Live.